In case you didn't get enough crap in the last episode of Dadages, we're back with more crap in this, the second half of the Entrepreneur's Corner episode with Liz Hall, creator of digestive regularity product Travelease. If you missed the first half, be sure to go back and check it out before listening to this episode.
You know, when I was your age, go ask your mother. I know you don't like it. It builds character. How many times do I have to tell you? I'm not just talking to hear my own voice.
Hello, listener, and welcome to Dadages. I'm your host, Chad Hagel. And if you are looking for some fatherly wisdom for your career, your family, or any other aspect of your life, then you've come to the right place. If you want to learn more about Dadages, find additional content, submit questions, or feedback to me, visit dadages.com. Thanks for being here. And before you listen to our podcast, please listen to your father. Dadages friends and family, welcome back. I hope you're feeling regular today, digestively speaking. In this continuing installment of Dadages Entrepreneur's Corner, we're back with Liz Hall, creator of Travelease, and we're picking up right where we left off in the last episode. We learned a lot about Liz and her background as a flight attendant and her personal health struggles with digestive issues. We learned how all of that gave her the inspiration and motivation to start Travelease, a consumer health product company focused on digestive health for travelers and keeping you going when you're on the go. Today, you'll hear me offer Liz a lot of crappy advice about her business, in a good way. Without further delay, let's get back to it. Well, now is the time when we kind of get to turn the table in Entrepreneur's Corner, and we move into the Q&A section where you get to ask the questions, and we'll talk about things that you want to know or things that you want to discuss that might help you with the growth of your business or facing the challenges that you have right now. And you and I, you know, before this interview, kind of talked about a few categories of things to talk about. And maybe we can start with the area of distribution channels, because I know that that's something that's very important to you and it's important to any consumer product company. So I think it's a great set of topics to talk about.
So, Chad, you mentioned that you have experience in the whole CPG world, right? Can you share some of your manufacturing and supply chain issues? Because I know I've had my fair share of learning and growing pains.
Yeah, there are horror stories there. If you find a good co-packer, that just means that you haven't really learned the truth yet. I hate to be so negative, but the co-packing industry that, and for those people that don't understand what that means it's a firm that manufactures products. And the term is used a lot within food and healthcare items and natural remedies and things like we're talking about. And they produce those items on behalf of another brand. So there are certain brands that are so large, they own their own production facilities, but there are very few for whom that's true. And it's very difficult to get to the scale where you can afford to own and operate your own facility. And so you're very much at the mercy of these other co-packers that will essentially provide their services to manufacture and deliver your product on behalf of you. What I have to tell you, though, is the ugly truth is these people don't care about you. They care about the bottom line. And maintaining product quality, I would say, is by far the hardest element. Consistency of the product and making sure that you know that every unit that comes out of that facility is exactly what you specified for it to be. And it really takes a hands-on approach. And this is something that Nina, my wife, and I learned firsthand through a lot of mistakes. And we went through two or three different co-packers before we found the best, worst option. And even then, we really, really had to be at the facility at least once a week, spot surprise inspections, going through and making sure that the process that they're using is what they told us it was going to be, and spot checking product coming off the line to make sure that the product is what they told us it was going to be, and really getting your eyes and your hands on what's going on there. What we saw is they'll take every opportunity they can to cut corners. They will substitute in ingredients that are not the ones that you provided to them, even if you're buying them yourself and furnishing them to the facility. And by the way, I would recommend that. And I do recommend that approach that you actually, rather than letting your co-packer deal with your suppliers on the raw materials, insert yourself into that process. And it may be a little bit more expensive, but you should buy your raw materials directly from the supplier if you're not doing that already and have them delivered to your co-packer. That way, you know exactly what's coming, you know exactly what's being paid for it, and there are no games being played in that phase between supplier and co-packer. Then when you get into the co-packer and you're dealing with them, like I said, it's really about being there and being very hands-on. We found, like I said, they would swap out the product we had delivered to them, and we'd find that product stashed in a storage room somewhere, and they weren't actually using it. They were using a cheaper alternative. And then we found at other times that they were, in this case, it was a cookie that was being made, and they were watering it down because they could hit higher volumes and still meet their delivery requirements with water added to the product. And the consistency of the cookies that were coming off the line was totally different than what the prototype was and the recipe that was provided to them. So I really hate to be so negative about it, but it really requires hands-on, first-person, in-person supervision to really be sure that your co-packer is giving you what you need and what you contracted for.
Yeah, no, it's not negative advice. It's excellent advice. And I have already experienced a few hiccups.
Yeah. No doubt. And that will just continue to be the way that it goes, unfortunately. You know, I know that you've been looking at different channels, not just in terms of your supply chain, but different ways of reaching your customers, different retail platforms and outlets. You know, what have you used so far? And do you have any questions or challenges specifically that you're facing in terms of a direct-to-consumer path, conventional retail, and other areas that you're selling your product?
Currently, I think I mentioned, you know, I'm direct-to-consumer on our website. I've done ads on Instagram. I've done ads on TikTok. I recently have had a major hiccup and they took my shop down from TikTok. So that's a whole other nightmare. I had a call this morning where someone's going to help me put it back up. They're saying that there's bots that take them down, flag them for whatever issue.
Yeah, these days, these companies that run these online platforms, there's no human being there that's screening anything. They've created an algorithm of some sort, and they've programmed it into a bot, which just is a fancy word of saying there's a computer scraping it and checking what's going on. And some of the algorithms are faulty. They're looking for violations of policy. They're looking for, you know, inappropriate material or inappropriate written material, inappropriate photographic material, and you could get flagged inappropriately. And once you get flagged, it's really, really hard from what I've seen to reestablish a page, to reestablish a shop. You know, you're dealing with some of the largest companies on planet Earth, and they're not exactly geared for direct customer support. So if you found somebody that's a live human being that is willing to advocate for you and help you, God bless you on that. That's a big challenge. And hopefully that does pan out for you and you can get back to selling there.
Well, let's hope so. It sounded promising this morning, but we shall see. To be continued.
I wish I could tell you that I had a consumer hotline to call and they would clear up everything for you, but it just simply doesn't exist. These companies haven't provided a way to advocate for yourself and get things back online whenever they come down.
Really unfortunate, and it's frustrating to say the least. I do have a PR firm that I have hired, and so they have gotten us in a few placements, which has been nice. I do have a blog that I send out weekly, and of course through social media, and I do plan on hiring an affiliate program in the coming month. And being on Walmart.com, which just happened earlier this month, which has only been for a few weeks now, it just happened like a week. It feels like it's been a few weeks. I am testing it out, making sure that there are no hiccups and that people that are ordering the product are receiving it smoothly without any issues before I start doing Walmart ads. So I do plan to participate on doing Walmart ads starting on the second month.
So that's it's a good point that you're bringing up. One of the things that I think is critical when it comes to advertising and when it comes to where your ad spend is going to be is that on platform, it tends to be more effective from what I've seen from off platform. Meaning in my case, I'll relate it to Dadages. We tried doing paid advertising on social media and we didn't find it effective. Because what you're doing is you're paying an audience that lives in one universe and trying to convert them to come to a different universe. Whereas we found that if we ran ads on other podcasts that targeted an audience that was similar to our audience and was already on a podcast platform, getting those people to come to Dadages on the same platform was far more effective. We got a much higher conversion rate for every ad dollar spent. So aligning your advertising budget with the platforms that you're using for sales, I think is a really, really important concept and a very wise use of those limited ad dollars, because those are precious dollars and you do need to make sure that they're being used effectively. And many times these on-platform advertising options do also give you very good data on the back end, so you can see the value of every dollar that you're spending. And I'm a numbers guy. I want to know that every dollar I'm spending is actually bringing a customer to me. And I think that's another added benefit of keeping your ad spending aligned with your platform.
Yeah, no, that's very important. And I agree, because with marketing in any platform, you could be throwing your money away. A lot of people do, a lot of businesses do, and it is a numbers game, and it does need to be strategic when you place an ad.
Now, I know when we spoke before, you were talking about, leading up to the interview, some more unconventional but more targeted sales channels. Because you're talking about the travel market, there were some really specialty areas that you're considering getting into. You want to talk about some of those, and maybe we can get into that a bit?
Yes, because of travel related and my product is named Travelease, from the very beginning, I've seen Travelease in my mind at hotels in the mini bars. I see that in all mini bars and all these hotels, because that's where people need it. That's where they're going to feel safe to take it. And that's when they are having their problems when they're traveling and they're in hotels. So I do plan on, and I have been targeting hotels. And in the future, I do also see it, you know, Hudson News airports, the stores at the airports. I see the product at the airports. In fact, I see it in a kiosk, a vending machine even. I have all these visions and dreams and ideas, but I am targeting hotels currently. And that's what I'm excited about. I think I mentioned that I'm going to Expo, but I'm also going to WeBank. I don't know if I mentioned WeBank, which is a Women Business Enterprise Council Expo. It's huge. And that is later this month. And I'm very excited to attend that, because I am a woman-owned business. I'm a minority-owned business. I'm a small, certified business as well, and a disability-based business. So I made sure to get all these proper certifications to attend these expos and network with the hotels, because I know that the Hilton, the Marriott, Caesars, they do plan on being at the Women's Expo, WeBank Expo, and that's actually in Denver later this month. I'm excited to be in front of these people.
So when you talk about these conferences, the piece of advice I would give there, and in my day job, in my primary industry of commercial real estate, our big conference is ICSC for the retail real estate industry, the International Council of Shopping Centers. And that's like 40,000 people in Vegas in May every year. And what I would say is, you're talking about this first time going to Expo, and it's fine just to go and open your eyes and see the industry and all of that. But when you really want to try to get something out of them, the key is getting the list of attendees that are going to be there ahead of time and working to book meetings with them before. Because if you don't go into a conference or an event like that with those meetings already lined up, or at least at a minimum, having reached out to them 10, 12 times, and I'm not exaggerating, I'm being direct in saying that, 10 or 12 times leading up to that conference. So to the point of being annoying, they're going to know who you are at least, even if they don't ever return your call, so that when you do show up at the conference, even if you don't have a meeting set with them, you then have the opportunity to engage with them. And then the key is what happens after the conference as well. Every business card you get, every name you get, every badge you scan, everything, it's important that you follow up with them, and you have to find a way for that follow-up to set you apart from anyone and everyone else. And that follow-up needs to be very tailored to tell your story in the way you want to tell it, not just to say, hey, I'm another product that I want to sell to you. I can't tell you exactly what that means or exactly what that is, but you're going to have to find the magic and the secret sauce and the little tricks that work the best to tell your story and capture their attention on that follow-up. So the event is great, but it's really about leading up to the event and then what happens after the event, which is far more important than what happens on that day in that conference center.
I couldn't agree with you more. And that is excellent advice. So I appreciate that, Chad. I feel in my mind, I feel like I'm a natural at expos. I thrive in those crazy fun environments. It's all energy. And I'm going there strictly for relationship building because I know it's the long game. So that's exactly it. Connecting with them on LinkedIn, meeting them in person, and then the follow up, right? And develop that relationship until they give you a chance to get in, open the door.
And for you, you know, you have a secret weapon, which is probably 85, 90% of the people at that convention are traveling to be there.
Yep.
So there is no better opportunity for you to give out samples to someone who is your direct consumer. Your customer is that person standing in that booth. I'm sure you're already planning to take advantage of that, but that's an obvious one to me.
No, 100%. I already see myself slinging travelies everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you got to come up with some really cool, interesting hook in terms of how you're presenting that to them. And I'm sure that it can be very effective. Now, coming back to your idea about getting into some of these specialty areas in the travel sector, I have colleagues that have operated like duty-free shops and things like that. And I can tell you that, you know, it's as hard, if not harder, to get your product on those shelves as it is getting your product on a shelf in a Walmart or in a Whole Foods. Those companies are run in a very regimented and structured manner. And many of them are headquartered in Europe. And so a lot of these decisions of the buyers and the product side and the stocking side of the businesses and determining what SKUs they're going to carry, those people may be almost inaccessible and very difficult to sell to. One of the things that I would urge you to consider, and this applies to both the hotel sector and the airport sector, is again, in line with the notion of wellness, in line of meeting your target customer, which you've identified as being predominantly female because women contend with these issues more frequently than men do. And this also comes from the experience that I had with Clean Break Foods. We had more success not trying to sell into a primary retailer, but offering a retail product opportunity to a service provider. And in this case, what I'm talking about is the spas. Oftentimes in hotels, the hotel doesn't actually operate the spa. And I'll give you a specific example. Many of the top hotels in New York contract out the spa service to Exhale. In fact, they just opened a brand new spa in the Virgin Hotel in New York that's awesome. I highly recommend it. But Mr. Branson, there's your free advertising plug for you. What I would tell you is that many of those companies are actually craving opportunities to monetize that bit of shelf space that they've got and find ways to add other revenue streams to the services they're providing, because every service they're providing has a labor cost associated with it. So their margins get very compressed. They can make much higher margins if you give them very effective products that they can sell to those customers that come into the spas. And spas have proliferated at airports now too. I think the biggest one is Express Spa, which is all over the United States in many of the airports. And I've actually spent some time leading up to this interview and checked out, they have an online store as well. And that online store is an extension of the retail offering that they have in the spa. And I looked through some of their product offerings, and the closest thing I could find to what you're offering was kind of a probiotic tablet. And again, as you said, tablets have some disadvantages to them. So I think you can offer them a product that would be differentiated from anything else they're currently offering. Funny side story, when I was looking through their product catalog, the thing that jumped out to me as being the absolute worst travel emergency item was they sell the Plan B pill, the birth control pill. And I was like, that is so bad, but so spot on at the same time. Like, I'm sure somebody is coming back from a phenomenal island vacation and saying, uh-oh.
Oh, that is comical, but yeah.
But you could have Travelies up there right next to Plan B.
It's a need. There's a need for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I appreciate that advice. And I love that idea of hitting up spas, and it's on my list for sure. So thank you.
Great. Great. So we've talked about, you know, some of the ideas around your supply chain. We've talked about some of the retail channels. We touched much earlier about advertising and marketing. You want to talk a little bit more about what your focus is there and any questions or ideas you might want to bounce off of me?
Well, if you could share about how to budget more so, right? Like I said, I still have my day job, right? And so I do one day dream of having Travelies be my full-time job. I've had my fair share of ups and downs in the roller coaster of real estate. And of course, there's going to be ups and downs in the entrepreneur of, you know, a product business, which I've experienced both. But can you share what you experience with your budgeting of operating your business?
Well, the best ad budget is zero. And from the real estate industry, you know this very well too. Your most effective advertising is word of mouth, your current customers and their ability to share their experiences with your potential customers. Now, when you're talking consumer product, you're having to reach a lot more people. So you got to get a lot more words out of a lot more mouths. But I think that's really, for a growth business in its early stages, I think that's the single most valuable thing that you can do, is to get that free advertising through word of mouth. And so I think creating incentives and creating pathways, creating funnels that really drive your existing customers to receive some sort of benefit associated with providing those testimonials. It can be something as simple as Instagram promotions, where, hey, if you tell your Travelies story on Instagram and tag us, we're going to send you a box of product, or we're going to put you in a drawing for, because you're a travel related company, you could create campaigns and contests that could drive even more participation by offering one really big prize, because people love to gamble, especially online. And so you could say, well, if you do this, and you have to figure out what are the things that are most important and valuable to you, you could be registered as an entrant in this huge contest that we have for a trip to Jamaica or something like that. Or Miami Beach. Keep it in line with your story. You're going to send somebody to Miami Beach to have the wonderful vacation you weren't able to have because of your digestive issues. You know, weave it into your story and make the promotion build the brand, so that telling the story of the promotion is advertising your company. You're weaving it together, and you're doing it in a way that's completely free, and that you're going to get people to start forwarding that to a friend. Hey, I just entered this contest to win a trip to Miami Beach. Why don't you enter too? We'll double our chances. If I win, I'm taking you. You win, you take me. So you can create a lot of these opportunities and promotions for free or very little ad spend to really get them going. And you've talked about testimonials already coming about from your customers naturally. You've just got to keep setting that wheel in motion and keep giving it a turn and giving it a turn and giving it a turn and finding every way you can to get those messages continuing and paying forward through other customers that they can reach on your behalf. You also mentioned earlier, when we were talking about certifications, the doctor that you had certified the product and identified as doctor approved. I don't know the doctor. I don't know how the doctor presents. If this doctor is somebody that presents well and would resonate well with your customer base, I would recommend finding a way to build up this doctor as an identity, create an identity around this doctor and build that identity and build that into some of what you're doing and get other faces out there. You are a phenomenal spokesperson for your organization and for your product, but you can advance others that might resonate with different parts of your audience in a different way. Hearing from a doctor says something very different to a customer that might trigger their buy decision, whereas hearing from the creator might trigger something else for a different customer. Getting the same message out there, but from different voices, and keeping that message consistent, different. Sometimes someone responds to hearing the exact same thing, but from a different voice. And so I think that's part of what you should be doing in spreading the word. And again, everything I just said is mostly free. to you and doing all of that stuff, but finding a way to get it out there is really important. And I know that leading up to the interview as well, you shared with me that you're looking to launch a podcast. And I think that there again, getting these same voices being delivered to a different audience through a different channel, but telling the same story, and again, just doing it within the context of your podcast and keeping it organic, all of that free advertising is what's going to do the best for you more than anything. Then when you talk about getting into actually paid advertising, again, I think strategic paid advertising will work better than straight up ad buys. We talked about doing ad buys and trying to focus those on a platform that is already on the same platform as where you're selling. I think that's a valuable use of money. But if you're building promotions with, look at, there are, for instance, in the social media realm, there are a lot of very high profile flight attendants. Those people don't endorse a product for free. But I think that given the association with the product, given the association with the brand, and given the association with you, one, maybe there's a, I don't know, is there a secret handshake among flight attendants where you'd get a friendly discount from them? Maybe you know the password to get it. I'm being facetious, but I'd hope that there's some sort of sisterhood amongst flight attendants and that they might cut you a deal, or maybe they want to participate as a partner in your company and take a profit share or something, rather than you having to pay them money up front. If you can build in promotional codes and things like that, that they can broadcast to their audiences, which are significant, and then they can get a piece of the action rather than you having to spend the money up front. Again, these are all strategies to minimize the upfront dollars you're committing and try to maximize the impact by doing it in a way that's contextual and that relates to your brand rather than just going out and burning a bunch of money on ads.
I appreciate all of that advice. That was priceless. So thank you. And I do hear everything you're saying, and you're spot on. So thank you.
Great. Great. Well, I'm glad you found that helpful. And I know that you had some questions as well. You know, being an entrepreneur, every entrepreneur faces capital crunches, especially when you're bootstrapping early on and running a business with your own money. What have your experiences been so far? How are you making things work today? And what questions or thoughts do you have about what's next that you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, well, I'm currently self-funded 100%. I have toggled with the idea of seed funding, right, and sourcing for capital. But before I do that, I am researching and applying for grants. Do you have any insight for grants? I would like to maintain ownership for as long as I possibly can until I'm not able to.
Tell me what type of grants you've been looking at particularly.
There's women grants, small business grants. There's a health and beauty grant that I just applied for.
Yeah. So I've dealt with grants in a nonprofit context, which are very different from what you're describing. The one thing I'll say about grants is they're, from my experience, and I don't know how much this carries over from the nonprofit realm to the for-profit grant realm, there's kind of a secret formula. And you may tell your story really well, but you're not telling it in the language they want to hear it in, or the format or the structure. And there are grant writers out there, and I think they are well worth the money because they know the secret formula. It's not that they know more about your business or that they could tell your story any better. They just know how to reframe it and position it to check the boxes that the grant reviewer needs to check, because they probably have a checklist and they probably have a scoring system. And if you're not hitting the points right on to get those extra points in the scoring system, you're simply not going to qualify for the grant, not because you're not worthy or because they wouldn't have funded you. You just didn't quite communicate it in the right way. And no one can really just give you instructions and tell you how to do that. You really would have to find a professional that specializes in that. And I think that those people are actually worth the money.
Yeah. I appreciate you saying that, because I have been toggling with the idea of, like, do I source someone out, because I haven't had any luck doing it myself.
It's one of the things that I would consider outsourcing if you're seriously focused on that as a means of raising capital. And the more conventional capital raising front, you know, you mentioned you thought about capital raising. What are you thinking about right now, or what's noodling around in your mind right now?
So many questions when it comes to sourcing for capital, right? I mean, that's a whole beast of its own. I feel very green. I know nothing about the whole capital raising. I do have a pitch deck, but I haven't used it to pitch anyone because I don't feel comfortable or confident just yet. I know that it's a numbers game and I'm still working on the numbers because I'm still, you know, a newer brand.
Sure, sure. Well, I have done a couple of episodes of Datages about it takes credit to make money was a series that I did. And I focused on real estate, capital raising, and then I focused on capital raising for early stage companies, particularly technology companies in that case. But most of the information that I shared there is sort of a 101 level course on writing a business plan and positioning yourself for raising capital. I spend a lot of my time working with entrepreneurs and reviewing business plans and working with them on helping to reshape them. And so, you know, I'm always available and happy as a follow-up to this. If you have a draft of a pitch deck, if you want to pitch me live, or if you just want to present the deck for my review, I see a lot of them. And again, it's kind of like I was talking about with the grants. I know the scoring system. It's not an explicit scoring system, but I know when you're going to talk to angel investors or talk to venture capitalists, I know what their mental checklist is and what they're going to need to see in the order they're accustomed to seeing it. So there's a science and there's an art to it. I'm happy to respond to what you can provide and give you some specific feedback on that. It's tough for me to provide general guidance on that. It's much easier for me to respond to something that's put in front of me and give feedback on it. And I think that's what I would urge you the most is I heard the fear, I heard the apprehension, I heard the hesitation. Gonna have to get through that. You're gonna have to just put it out there because you're gonna have to mistake your way to growth. If you're not making the mistakes, you're not growing and you're not getting better and you're not improving. And you're much better off getting it out there and then iterating. Because right now, all it's doing is sitting in your computer and wasting hard drive space. You're not achieving anything with it until you put it out into the world. And don't send it out to everybody because that's not smart either. But start finding people where there's a low risk associated with sharing it with them, low reputational risk, low competitive risk, low disappointment risk, and get it out there because you need that feedback. And if you're not getting the feedback, it's not getting any better.
I appreciate that. And I will definitely be taking you up on that offer. So thank you.
For sure. I'm here to do it and happy to do it. And, you know, I think that's probably, a great note for us to come to a conclusion on today. And, you know, I'll just reiterate from my perspective and what Datages is all about is building community. And you're now a part of the Datages friends and family. And we would love to watch your company grow. We'd love to stay apprised of all of your new product launches and everything you're doing and everywhere you're going. And, you know, we talked about on-platform marketing, and I know I've put you in touch with Nate from my team, and one of his superpowers is creating an ad swap program. And so we would be very eager to continue to advertise in a direct capacity to the Datages friends and family, your product, to create promotional codes for our friends and family to be able to get the product and to create advertising back and forth between your podcast and our podcast. And I think that we'll find that to be very successful. We've already had success with it with other guests we've had on who have podcasts. And it's just one of the many ways that we would love to stay in touch with you and help see Travel Ease grow to the next level.
I love that. And I'm all in. I did speak with Nate because I do have a podcast called The Gutsy Babe with Liz Hall.
I love it. The Gutsy Babe. It's a great double entendre.
Exactly.
And, you know, one of the things that we try to do as well is keep things light, keep things funny, and lean on humor because humor makes the world go round, even in the toughest of times. On this topic, there have to be, you said you've heard every poop narrative out there. You've got to have some great poop jokes that you could share with us to celebrate the legacy of the terrible parent joke.
Yes. Okay. Poop jokes. Did you hear about the constipated composer?
No, I didn't.
He had problems with his last movement.
Oh, my.
What's the German word for constipation?
I have no idea.
Far from pooping. And I was going to tell you another poop joke, but it's too crappy.
Ah, you got me. You got me on that one. You set me up and then boom, there it was. That's fantastic. Perfectly
It's all crap.
A total load of crap. Well, this whole interview has been a load of crap, and it's been wonderful. Liz, we really appreciate you spending time with us here on Dadages. I know that the friends and family have been very moved by this episode of Dadages, and I hope that they tap into your community and try out Travelease so they can be fully moved. And you know, really enjoyed having you on and spending this time with you.
I appreciate it. And I had a great time speaking with you. So thank you. And I was honored to be on Dadagers. So thanks again.
You're very welcome. And I'll just remind the rest of the friends and family, until next time, remember, Dad may not always know what he's talking about, but he sure can sound like he does.